With everyone fighting for attention, how can your business stand out and connect with customers? Easy, with Constant Contact. Constant Contact's award-winning marketplace platform has helped millions of small businesses stand out, stay top of mind, and see big results fast. It's okay if you don't know much about marketing. Constant Contact's writing assistant tools and automation features help you craft messaging and say the right things at the right time. I use this to help write and send my email newsletters, and you should too. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
We are here, and it is right now, the Fight IQ UFC 300 preview, Alex Pereira versus Jamahal Hill for the light heavyweight title, although there are probably two or three fights that could, in an alternate universe, headline this card. That's the kind of quality we're talking about. Thank God Almighty, it has been too long. I am Chris. I am your host for the proceedings. With me, as always, is Joe, and the man who is a burden to no one, certainly not us. Ooh. It is Drake. He is here with us as well. And fellas, I couldn't hold in my excitement. Me and Drake were talking before we went live here, and I can't even remember when I've been this excited for a UFC card. Now, part of that is an indictment on the UFC, but I will put my haterade away for one night because I am so excited for this card. I do like it so much. As for DraftKings, for DFS, for betting, for watching as a fan, it's just the best of all worlds. And I guess I'll kick it over to Drake first. Drake, I know you share my enthusiasm for this card, as I'm sure many people do. What are you looking forward to most?
Top to bottom, bottom to top, all of it. There's not a fight on this card that I'm not looking forward to. Even UFC 299, 298, 277, they were all right, but they weren't there. This card is just stacked, and I cannot wait for tomorrow night.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I'm even blown away by the prelims, and I'm blown away because I do the projections for RotoWire. So I look and I was just stunned that I didn't see one debuting fighter. I didn't see one contender series fighter. You can cheat and you can maybe count Bo Nickel, but that's kind of a different story. But I think you all know what I mean. I mean, there's nobody that you had to drudge up tape from whatever organization, Jungle Fight or wherever they fought before this card, which was a very, very nice feeling. Joe, I assume that you agree with those sentiments, but how do you feel about the card?
Yeah, so it's been a rough couple weeks for me. I mean, it's tough when you are pretty much out of a slate before, after it immediately starts, like what happened with Melissa Gatto, like two slates back. And, last slate was a dumpster fire for me. So it's been a rough couple weeks. I think, honestly, 299 was the last time I had like positive ROI on a slate. And I will say that the only fight on this card that I'm not looking forward to is the Bo Nickel fight. I mean, honestly, he must have naked pictures of Dana White. I mean, it's a travesty that he's actually on the main card. There are so many more deserving fighters that should be on the main card. And you got Bo Nickel in yet another setup fight. Like, if you're going to put him on the main card, at least give him a challenge. I mean, there should not be a main card fighter that's 30-1 to win the fight. He's actually 15-1 to win the fight inside the distance. So you essentially have an unbettable fight with a huge favorite that's on the main card, which is, it's ridiculous. There are so many better fights, in the prelims and even the early prelims that would be better suited for the main card versus Bo Nickel and Cody. I mean, come on, seriously. Other than that, I think it's a great card. I think you have 12 really good fights.
Yeah, absolutely. And by the way, you talked about that. It's going to be interesting when we get to that fight, at least from my perspective. But what I will say is that it is funny because this what they're doing with Bo Nickel, and I won't harp on it too much, it almost feels more like a Bellator coming along than it does a UFC coming along. It feels like what they did with Aaron Pico early on. It feels like what they did with AJ McKee, where like, okay, this guy's been here a while now, and you're still giving him nobody. So we'll see how that goes. And it is a test he has to pass, but I will say no more. We'll talk about that later. And before we get into the meat of the card, which we are coming to, I promise, I just want to say, RotoWire, 10-day free trial. Give it a try. RotoWire.com/free. No credit card required. All of our content, MLB heating up, MMA, of course, NBA, all the different sports, you know, NHL winding down. Get into everything. That's 10-day free trial. Again, RotoWire.com/free. Okay, now we are going to light the match here with our first fight. And it is, you know, can you believe this is the first fight? I mean, we're going to probably say it a lot in this fight, but it can't be overstated. It is Deiveson Figueiredo at 9,100 taking on Cody Garbrandt at 7,100. Line on this fight is Figueiredo at -310. Cody Garbrandt at +260, and, you know, it's so hard to believe in Cody Garbrandt that even against a guy like Brian Kelleher, when he does what he did, it kind of saps your night, or at least it did to me, just because I've lost so much faith in Cody Garbrandt. And then, I mean, before that, we saw the Trevin Jones fight where he basically did nothing. So that was kind of a surprise, but this one, I really don't think he's going to have anything for Deiveson Figueiredo. I mean, I feel like if he gets into the pocket and tries to swing like that with Figueiredo, Figueiredo just going to make him have a really bad time. I also think Figueiredo is the better grappler, the better wrestler. Cody gets tired when he wrestles. He's not the best control grappler. So, I mean, I don't really like this for Cody Garbrandt at all. We know how tough Deiveson Figueiredo is. We know that his power is going to translate just fine up here. And I see this as a quick night at the office for our man Deiveson. I think that he's going to get a finish here. I think he's going to score big. I like him at the 9,100 salary to kick off the card. And we're going to start, I believe, with Joe. We'll start with tonight. Joe, how do you see the curtain jerker here?
Yeah, I like Figueiredo a fair bit. And I think he can win. You know, striking, I think he could take him down, Garbrandt, and choke him out. My only fear is that, you know, Cody just stays on his engine and try and runs the entire fight. And we get like a low scoring decision, but I really, you know, don't see, I suppose he's, you know, I would say he has a puncher's chance, but, I don't really see it happening. I think Figueiredo's going to be stronger. I think he's going to, like I said, he's better everywhere. Now, I did listen. I don't believe I heard the salaries.
Yes, you did, sir. It was 9,100 and 7,100.
Okay, I apologize then if you said the salaries. Yeah, 9.1K, there's obviously a lot to choose from in the upper tiers, but I also think there's some value. There's some sub-8K value that we could actually chase, and some legitimate value. And I'll give you my favorite play on the entire slate coming up. And, you know, I won't bury the lead, but my favorite play on the entire slate is sub-8K. So, you know, you can fit Figueiredo in there with another 9K fighter and still have a pretty decent lineup and get your 6 wins across. So I don't plan on having much Garbrandt. I'm going to be very minimal, probably, you know, under the field. I can't see myself having more than 10%. I plan to max out the $3, but I'm not going to max out the $30, but I'll max out the $3, and I'll probably have no more than 10% Garbrandt.
You know, that might be the lead. That's a pretty shocking bullet in your favorite play under 8K, especially in a slate like this, but we will get there. Drake, what about you? How do you see the first fight here?
You know, I wrote up the Figueiredo is one of my favorite plays on the slate. I don't, you know, he came up to 135 and made Rob Font look like a child. I think Garbrandt's going to be in a world of trouble from the starting minute in this fight. I fully expect, I could see this ending in round one. I don't know how Garbrandt wins this fight unless he somehow lands flush and just wobbles him. I don't see it happening. I got Fig all day.
Yeah, me too. I mean, the thing about Figueiredo is you would think he would be giving something up coming up in the weight, but he's really not. I think he's as quick as ever. I think he's as powerful as any of these guys. So, you know, especially Garbrandt, and I do like him here as well a fair bit. We will move on to the next fight. More action pack. It is Bobby Green at 8,600 taking on Jim Miller at 7,600. Those were the salaries. If anybody wants to remind Joe in the chat, it is the odds are -180 for Bobby Green, +150 at Jim Miller. And, you know, I feel like we have a lot of fights like this kind of stuck in that mid range where I feel like you're going to have one or the other. This is going to be such a high paced fight. With Jim Miller coming after Bobby Green and Bobby, you know, it's almost the kind of fight that each guy wants to fight. Jim Miller is just going to be able to chase Bobby Green down, and Bobby Green is going to be able to hang back and flow and work off the counter as he likes to do. It's got to be concerning that Bobby Green got smashed by Jalen Turner and a late knockout of that and took a lot more punishment than he should have. And Jim Miller is still a dangerous puncher when he gets in the pocket. But I always say speed kills, and Bobby Green is just going to be a lot faster. And I think he's going to find his counter shots rather. Jim Miller's not going to be able to out-grapple him. Bobby Green has always been an underrated wrestler. I think that's going to show through here too. I think somebody is probably going to sleep. And I think, you know, You almost want to say it's a storybook for Jim Miller, so he's not going to lose, but I can't pick it like that. So I have to go with my feeling here, which is that Bobby Green is just going to be too fast, too technical, and he's a decent puncher, but he's certainly not Drew Dober, and so he's not just going to be able to catch him out like that. Jalen Turner has that length. He's not going to be able to catch him out like that. I don't think Jim Miller has any, you know, real edge up that's going to say, oh, this is how he beats Bobby Green. And so I have to pick Green here, and I like him quite a bit as well. And we're going to start this one with Drake. Drake, how do you see this fight?
So I have it kind of written up and drawn up the same way. I've got Green, but ever so slightly, and mainly because Miller, in his last five wins, they have all come by way of finish, and that is a mix of takedown or submissions and knockouts. And then Bobby Green, that last knockout does worry me some. He will be the faster fighter, but you know, if I, like you said, it's a storybook. Miller won at UFC 100, he won at UFC 200, and here we are at three. He got his wish, he's back on the card. So I mean, I don't like I have Green to win, but I like Miller as a better play on DraftKings for tournaments.
Yeah, it's I do think you need both, but I can see why you like Miller better, just because the guy forcing the action and, you know, of course, the salary. Joe, how are you seeing the second fight here?
Yeah, it's interesting because I was thinking about this from a DraftKings perspective, very similar to how Drake just laid it out, where I think I don't necessarily see a Bobby Green finish here. I think if the fight is a finish, it's going to be Jim Miller who wins. I am going to pick Bobby Green as the pick, but outside of that flash knockout of Dawson, you know, he's not really a knockout puncher. I mean, he's more of a volume puncher. He'll put a volume out there. So I see this, you know, Bobby Green winning by decision or Miller winning by finish. So in that respect, I see Miller, and believe it or not, I pretty much see this fight playing outstanding. You know, you mentioned Bobby Green being an underrated wrestler, and I do see this being a standing fight for the most part, and I don't think it's going to score super high. So, you know, I don't know how much Bobby Green I'm going to have, you know, or Miller. I'll probably be right at whatever the market is on both of these fighters, but I'm going to pick Green to win, but I'm going to kind of parody what Drake just said, that, you know, if there's a finish, it's probably going to be by Miller. And for that reason, it makes Miller a better DraftKings play.
You know, that could be. But also, I think even if he doesn't get a finish, I think the Bobby Green volume in this fight with a win could easily get you like 90 to 92.
Maybe.
You know, that kind of thing. So even if he does, I think the floor win is pretty high. And Jim Miller's going to be walking right into him. So I think there's a higher chance than maybe necessary, but I do agree that Jim Miller is the better consistent finisher, of course. All right, next fight coming up. It is, let's get back to lobby. The next fight on the card is Mariana Rodriguez at 8,100 taking on Jessica Andrade, also at 8,100. Line on this fight. We got Andrade at minus 130, Mariana Rodriguez at plus 110 currently. And, you know, I hope Jessica Andrade isn't going to turn into one of these fighters who I just can't get right anymore. I picked her a couple of times when she was going crazy and just sort of losing in the first round because she would spend all her energy. And then we saw much more composed Jessica Andrade in that fight against Mackenzie Dern. Now, maybe because she knew she had to be. Maybe because she knew, okay, that's the one thing I can't do is rush in. And we saw what she can do. Now, even if she does fight like that standing, she's not going to be a better striker than Mariana Rodriguez. But Rodriguez just recently got dominated on the ground by Verna Jandroba. 12 minutes of control time in that 15-minute fight. So Andrade going back to her wrestling here, that could be a very big score. Now, Andrade hasn't used it that much lately. Partially that's opponent based, you know, the Derns of the world, etc. But I like Andrade here just because I don't view Rodriguez as a knockout puncher, and I think Andrade can walk through some punches as well to get her clinch and to even land her big shots. And I just think at the end of the day, and after a while, she's gonna overwhelm Rodriguez. So I have to go on Andrade here, and I really think she could put up a big score at 8,100, but we will turn it over to Drake. Drake, how do you see this one?
I am in the same boat. I have Andrade and Figueiredo as a two-piece parlay. Andrade is one of my favorite plays. I think she's completely underpriced. I think she's being underbet. Rodriguez is, you know, she's a known striker. That's what she does. She doesn't have much else to her game. She does typically have a reach advantage, and Andrade is used to that. Andrade is used to getting into the pocket, lighting people up, putting people down. I expect her to just get in there and take her down immediately. It'll, you know, I think we're going to see one of her signature slams where she just picks her up, drops her, and then she just hammers away with ground and pound. I love Andrade in this fight.
Yeah, I do as well, which kind of makes me nervous that we're going to see the regressed Jessica Andrade that's just going to flail around and just be on the edge of Rodriguez's punches. I hope not. I hope she's a little bit more composed, and that's what I'm going to bet on, certainly. Joe, what about you? How do you see this one?
Yeah, I'll complete the trifecta here. I mean, I perhaps don't love her as much as you guys, or at least maybe as much as Drake. Because I, you know, like she really looked good in her last fight, but before that, I thought she was essentially washed. I mean, she's had some personal issues where apparently she was in the middle of a divorce and it was costing her a lot of money, which is why she had to stay active and take fights that maybe she didn't want to take. And she was never, even when she was champ, you know, she was never one of the highest paid champs. I remember she was like selling baked goods at camp to like raise money. Like, it was really kind of a sad story, and it's a testament to how little the UFC pays some of their fighters. But yeah, I like Jessica Andrade here, but I think I have it a little bit closer than maybe you guys do. And I don't know how much I love this fight overall, but I'll certainly take off of her last performance. I'll take Jessica Andrade in this fight.
Yeah. And you know, I get the hesitation too. It is one fight. I mean, look, if you were going into the Dern fight saying, oh, she's a new fighter, look at that Angela Hill fight, you got a surprise. So it is a little nerve-wracking always off one fight. So
let me pause it real quick there. So you go back to look at the three fights that Andrade lost. She lost to Blanchfield, who was beating everybody until she got stopped against Fiorro. She lost to Yan Xiaonan, who is co-maining tonight against Whaley, and she lost to Tatiana Suarez, who would probably beat just about everybody in the division. So it's three really good losses. I mean, it's acceptable for a fighter to lose their way a little bit against the top competition. And you know, she came out, she did her did what she needed to. She's still only 32. I mean, she's got plenty of life left. She's a vicious fighter. I think you see a continuation from her last fight and the winning streak she had before those three losses.
Yeah, I agree. And I think her being controlled by Verna in that fight really, really seals the deal for me. So we will see how that one goes. But the next fight up we got here, it is Jalen Turner at 8,900 taking on Hanato Money Moicano at 7,300. I don't think that's a thing we're doing anymore, but maybe. I don't know. Turner can be had at -205. Moicano coming back at +175. And honestly, at this point in his career, I kind of view Moicano as a panic wrestler. I mean, that's kind of what he has to do to win these fights. I just feel like every moment he's on the feet, he's in trouble. And if you're looking at a guy like Jalen Turner, he's going to have a big height advantage coming in. Not so much reach. I think the reach is only 1 inch, but a big height advantage, I believe 4 or 5 inches. And, you know, that's going to matter maybe even more than range when it comes, rather length when it comes to closing the distance. And, you know, Turner has decent takedown defense. I believe it's somewhere in the vicinity of 70 to 75%. And I'm just not going to bet on takedown sub from Moicano here. I think that he's just too easy to beat if you can stuff his takedowns. I mean, Dober really was a bonehead move in the third round there that I think cost him that fight. He was on his way to victory. Moicano, look, if he... I should add as kind of a caveat that if he gets his way, it's probably going to be a big score because the only way he can fight now is spamming those takedowns. So if he gets the kind of fight he wants, he's going to win pretty big as the underdog. So you need to have a little bit of Moicano, but I really just see Jalen Turner as the better fighter here. I think the range is going to be a problem when it comes to getting in for takedowns. And I think Moicano, who gets hit hard anyway, even when he does get his takedowns and get the fight he wants, is just going to have a lot to deal with here. And I can't pick him. So I'm going Jalen Turner in the spot. And Joe, we'll go to you first here. How are you seeing this one?
Yeah, I think there's been some steam on Moicano and there's been some whispers on, you know, Moicano potentially having a path to win, which, you know, he obviously does. I mean, if you look at Jalen Turner's fights, before his last fight, which granted he looked real well. Wasn't he in the midst of a pretty serious losing streak? I should be looking that up, I suppose. But yeah, he, you know, Moicano's been relatively steady. You know, if you go back to even to his fight, if you look way back, his fight against, Brian Ortega, he was winning that fight. I mean, all he had to do was stay away from Ortega in the third round. And he won that fight. But of course, Fight IQ, he followed Ortega into the, you know, into Garden, got choked out. He also looked incredibly good against Calvin Kattar. I actually was at that fight. That was supposed to be Habib and Tony, and it ended up being Habib and Iaquinta. You know, when I was ringside for that fight, and he looked just really good in that fight. So look, he's been around. He's got multiple paths to victory. I think he's got a pretty good ground game. I understand liking him as a dog, and there's a bit of recency bias on Turner. I guess, you know, I'll pick Turner to win, but I think this is a fight that you should play both sides of on DraftKings.
Yeah, and that's why I threw that in there, because I really think it's easy to get burned just by pointing out that Jalen Turner is the better fighter, which he is. But Moicano's tough, and he's going to spam his takedowns, and he's the better jiu-jitsu guy. So 7,300 is a good price for that kind of fighting style. But as I say, I think Turner does some serious damage before that happens. What about you, Drake? How are you seeing this one?
I am also on Turner, but I'm closer to Joe on the totality of the fight. I just – Moicano has, I mean, he's always got a clear path to victory, and it's, you know, once he gets a hold of you, it's hard to get away from him. He is a complete mess on the feet. He's wild. He has been knocked out however many times, and definitely doesn't have much of a chin. Jalen Turner would be smart to keep this on the feet and just sit there and pepper away at his chin until, you know, he rocks him, shocks him, whatever it is. But it's not a fight that I trust. I have it purely as GPP because I don't. I'm not fully on the Turner train yet. He's got a boneheaded IQ sometimes. I just not quite there with him. His last fight against Bobby Green, you know, he looked good, but it's a tough call. I've got Turner, but it's not by much.
Yeah, it's a close fight, and this is one of those fights where it could go either way. And if you're on the other side, you're gonna go, "Oh, I knew it," you know, because it's just one of those. And so I do think you should have both. I do think either one could put up a big score as well. So intriguing fight there, and I think you guys laid it out pretty well. All right, we're going to move on now, and the next fight is, and I should really do better at keeping my lobby up to date, it is Diego Lopez at 8,500 taking on Sadiq Youssef at 7,700. Line on this fight, Diego Lopez minus 130, Sadiq Youssef plus 115, and I think I just like the chaos of Diego Lopez to win the day here. Youssef is a good puncher, but he can be kind of rote in the pocket. He had all sorts of problems with Arnold Allen, who's also an unorthodox to the awkward striker, and I just think the pressure of and pace of Lopez is gonna do too much to him here. He's gonna mix in the takedowns as well in the grappling. Youssef, you know, not really a finisher per se. I mean, he can hit hard. And that's why that's why he was chasing the Barbosa finish so hard. You know, he wanted that one. But and he will get tired, as we saw. He's the better fighter on the feet, of course, as far as technique goes. But I just don't think it's going to matter here. I think Lopez is going to, you know, storm the castle and just sort of take this fight over. So my pick is Diego Lopez. And I'll start with Drake first. Drake, how do you see this one?
Yeah, this is one of my sneaky fights, you know, as far as GPP goes. I think Diego is going to be under-owned, and I absolutely love him in this fight. He's going to have a considerable edge on the ground if he chooses to take it there. You mentioned that Youssef does not have a ton of power. I completely agree with that. He is definitely, he's a solid fighter. He's a great striker. He's really technical. He's quick. Unfortunately for him, I just think Lopez is just better. I think he's better everywhere. His last two fights, we didn't get to see the entirety of his striking because it ended 90 seconds, you know, in each fight. I don't see a quick finish like that one in this fight, but I do expect to see his full skill set on display and for him to take this pretty handily.
Yeah, I do agree. I think it's one of those that unless Lopes gets caught with something early, I think he's just going to control this one. What about you, Joe? How are you seeing it?
Yeah, you know, again, I don't know about handily, but I'll go with Lopes. Hasn't really fought. I mean, obviously he looked really good when he fought. Who did he fight in Newark? Where he looked really good off his back. Big underdog. That was his UFC debut. Anyway,
Evalev.
Yes, sorry. He looked really good against Evalev, and then crushed a couple cans. I mean, and cans because they were either old or on their way out of the UFC. So I think this is probably his toughest test in terms of going in there and being a guy that, you know, is expected to win, you know, this fight. So I'll pick Lopez. I just don't think it's going to be as easy as some people might think. And I will have a few shares of Sadiq. But yeah, I'll take Lopez here.
We should point out, too, 29 fights for Diego Lopez. I mean, the guy, his third UFC fight, but he is a major veteran. I mean, that's a lot of fights.
Yeah, he comes from a jiu-jitsu family. I think his grandfather, if I heard it right, is a coral belt. And for those that don't know what a coral belt is, it's like above a black belt. And I think there's only 30 or so of them in the world, or like a really low number of coral belts in the world. And to get to coral belt, you have to be, I think, a black belt for 30 years. So, like, it's he comes from a very, you know, accomplished, you know, BJJ family, you know, and, you know, so he's got fighting in his genes. So, look, I want to see how good he does here. You know, and if he really runs through Sadiq, then yeah, I could see him on a real steady trajectory.
Yeah, it could certainly be a coming out party, and it's an interesting fight for sure.
Just before we move on, you mentioned his family. Almost all of them are black belts. His sister is a black belt. His brother's a third degree black belt. His father is a fifth degree black belt, and then his uncle is the Coral belt.
Oh, his uncle. I wasn't sure if it was his uncle or his grandfather. Okay.
I love that Coral belt. Is there like rhinestones on it or something? Or
I don't know.
It's very exotic sounding.
So I mean, quick story. My friend, you know, a friend and a guy who has worked in the same space as me for years, and I've known him, you know, going back to when I was on Wall Street in the 90s. He just received his seventh degree black belt in Taekwondo.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, that was like, and there aren't a lot of seventh degree black belts in Taekwondo. And so it's been a lifelong achievement for him to get that, you know, to get that black belt.
Nice. There's only one thing left to do now, and that's challenge Joe Rogan.
Yeah, I know, right? Oh, he'd kill Joe Rogan.
All right, moving on. It is the debut of Kyla Harrison in the UFC at 9,300, taking on Holly Holm at 6,900. Line on this fight, it is – no, I'm not doing that. Line on this fight is Kayla Harrison at minus 460, Holly Holm at plus 360. And I'm picking Kayla Harrison. I think this is a tougher fight for her than people might think. Just because, one, Holly's always been incredibly strong for the division and hard to take down. And two, of course, the difference on speed is just going to be phenomenal. And this could be something like a bike fight. Joe kind of mentioned that earlier with Garbrandt, where she just sort of skirts along the octagon. And, you know, I just have to go back to that Larissa Pacheco fight. I know they're very different fighters, Holly Holm and Larissa Pacheco. But, you know, she was able to disrupt Kayla Harrison from bottom position just by being active off of her back, just by throwing strikes and kind of being able. So, you know, I'm not really sold on Kayla Harrison. I know she had that bounce back win against Aspen Ladd, who she just kind of handily outgrappled. But, you know, Aspen Ladd and Holly Holm, I feel like the strength differential there is pretty wide. So, you know, this one kind of worries me a little bit in terms of scoring. I think either way it doesn't score, though, because I don't love Holm getting finished. She's only been taken down by three opponents, if I remember correctly. One was Raquel Pennington in her first fight. And then I think I forget the other two, but I know she got subbed by Buena Silva. That was kind of a weird thing because Holly gets in these modes where she just tries to grapple with fighters for no reason. And then she just kind of got subbed there. She's not going to do that against Kayla Harrison. So this is kind of a weird fight for me. I still kind of want to see what Kayla Harrison has here. I think Holly's a good test. I'm picking Kayla Harrison, but this is certainly not one that I'm super confident. There are a lot of plays I like other than this, I should say. And we'll start with Drake. Drake, do you share my trepidation or are you full on Kayla Harrison here?
I do not share your trepidation, sir. Although I do not, I will preface it by saying I don't like where she is priced on DraftKings. I think this is a horrible matchup for Holly Holm. Holm does two things really well, and that's strike from range, run in circles, and hold people in the clinch against the cage. And you're going to do that against arguably the best judo fighter in the world. Good luck. You're going to see Holly Holm on her back multiple times this fight.
Yeah, it's definitely possible. And it's a good point. And Holly, you can't talk about late career Holly Holm without talking about the fact that she does love doing that. Getting fighters against the fence and just kind of stalling out there. So if she does decide to do that, that will be trouble. And in that case, we probably will see a sort of a big score. But, you know, she got tired in that Pacheco fight too. So, you know, that just kind of adds to it for me. But I do certainly see what you're saying. Joe, what about you? How do you see this one?
Yeah, well, first of all, you know, she looked horrible at weigh-ins, like absolutely like death warmed over. It looks like she lost half her muscle mass. She made weight, which I actually, if there was a line on whether she made weight, I would have definitely been on the side that she made weight, because I had heard that they had a weight test, a weight cut test, at some point in the past, and she was able to make the weight. But boy, did she look bad on the scales. Like, she could not get off that scale quick enough. That's how bad she looked. And again, I understand you hydrate, you put on muscle mass. This is probably going to be the largest crowd she's ever fought in front of, right? Like, I can't imagine she's fought on a bigger card in front of a larger crowd. And this goes back to her, like, honestly, how many people show up for women's judo in the Olympics? Not that many. So this is going to be the biggest crowd that she's fought in front of. She doesn't need the money. I don't know. Like, it wouldn't surprise me if Holly schooled her here. I think Kayla's got one way and one way only to win, right? And she's not a great wrestler. So she, you know, although, I mean, lately she's been shooting some single and double legs, but she needs to use her judo to get the fight to the ground and then get top control. And look, I think Pacheco has her number, really. I mean, you know, so look, I wish she wasn't fighting a 42-year-old in Holly Holm, but I think this fight is a bit closer, and I, like, would not be comfortable betting this fight. For the purpose of picking a winner, I'll pick Kayla, because I think the UFC made a bit of an investment, and, you know, they want her to win this fight, and then I could really see her moving fast and getting a title shot really soon, you know, probably early 2025. If she wins her next fight. So I'll pick her, but I just am not, I don't think this is going to be the slam dunk that people think. And I am a little concerned about how she looked at weigh-ins.
You know, I will say that I've never really been all that concerned about how people look at weigh-ins, just because we've seen too many times of people on, like, death door, and then they come out and they have a good performance. But what I will say is that I don't recall Holly Holm ever getting subbed in, like, a conventional way. Misha Tate got on her back standing, and then she tried to flip her over, and that was a rear naked choke. And then she had the standing sort of ninja choke from Buena Silva. So it's going to be interesting to me to see how she handles this from bottom position. She won't win there, obviously, but can she keep herself safe enough to be there? I think the fight's a little closer too. I'm still picking Harrison, but one thing me and Dre can agree on anyway is, you know, at the price, I think we both like other fighters for the price and below. But an interesting fight for sure, and a binary fight that we will see how it plays. And next fight coming up is Aljamain Sterling making his debut at his new weight class at 8,400, taking on Calvin Kattar at 7,800. Line on this fight, it is Aljamain Sterling at minus 160, Calvin Kattar at plus 140. And I have a general rule, and it is don't bet or play DFS or invest too heavily in DFS on grapplers who are moving up in weight. It just doesn't work out that well. We've seen it time and time again where guys just don't have the same success moving bodies around that they did at their other weight class. Calvin Kattar has always been hard to take down anyway, even in his own weight class. And, you know, he's just going to be the much better striker here, much slicker striker. And I think Aljamain Sterling's going to run out of ideas. This is a bad first matchup for him, I believe. And I don't think it's going to go well for him. I like Calvin Kattar to really kind of style on him here after a few empty shots. And I think that's going to be the story of this fight. And I actually like Kattar as a sneaky nice play for DFS for that purpose. But we will start with Drake. Drake, you going with the dog here, or are you going with the Funkmaster in his weight class debut?
Start with Joe first.
Thank you, Drake.
We'll start with Joe first.
Yes.
I wonder what's coming.
This is my best play on the entire slate, and it's Calvin Kattar. This line is off. It should be flipped. I don't see how Sterling actually wins this fight. Kattar has got elite takedown defense. I actually sat next to Kattar and had a really nice conversation with him in Boston. I was fortunate enough to win a a DraftKings contest where I got to go up and see the card that was in Boston where O'Malley beat Sterling. And at our dinner that was held by DraftKings, both Font and Cater showed up. And Cater was really nice and he was talking to me about his recovery and how he wanted to fight, you know, on UFC 300. I don't see how Sterling wins. I mean, Cater is so much more proficient a striker than Sterling. Also, I felt Cater won the fight against Josh Emmett. He's got great defense. I really don't know how Sterling wins this fight. I don't understand the line at all. I think it's nuts. I think this is a bad move for Sterling. The other thing is, if you guys like narrative, like Sterling is not training as much with the Longo camp. I mean, he's kind of just bouncing around Las Vegas is what I'm hearing. So I love Calvin Kattar here. I'm betting him at plus 140, plus 145 at 7.9K. He's my favorite play on the entire slate.
Wow, that is an endorsement. Okay, we are going back to Drake. make it worth the wait. How do you see this one?
I can't make it worth the wait after that.
Well, give it a shot.
You know, Joe made a lot of very valid points there. So I went Sterling. Sterling's always been a weight bully. One, you know, moving up a division for him shouldn't really be that big of an issue. And the biggest reason that I went with Sterling is because Cater hasn't really fought an elite grappler of his level. And I worry about how much damage and Cater's age. Cater's 36. He took 400 strikes against Holloway. He came out, he did beat Giga, but he still took 100 strikes. Then he came out and he lost to Emmett, but I still think he won that fight. Still, he took another 100 strikes. Most of these shots are to his face and his head. And then he came out and he got knocked out by Arnold Allen. That shit takes a toll on you. And, you know, it's been said so many times, once your chin goes, it goes. That's why TKZ retired. He still has plenty of fight in him, but his chin's gone. And that is my biggest concern with Cater. It's not like Sterling doesn't know how to strike. And he definitely knows how to grapple. We all know that. It's where his game is. And so this is a really tough fight, you know, to call. So I'm going to stick with my pick. I'm going to stick with Sterling. But I completely get where both of you guys are coming from.
Yeah, it is tricky. I mean, we know, especially a guy who can use his length as well. I mean, he could wrap him up like a Christmas present and, you know, kind of melt away rounds, sort of like he did with Peter Yan. But it's just burned into my brain that when these guys move up, they just have trouble with the wrestling. So I'm going to stick with that and stick with Cater, but definitely a fight to watch and an interesting one. But we will move on now, and it is getting into the nitty-gritty of this card. It is, which again, how can you even say that? It's all so good. But it is Jiří Procházka, or you know what? Let me start with Rakic, because this fight is so close, at Alexander Rakic at 8,200, taking on Jiří Procházka at 8,000. Line on this fight is similarly close. Well, kind of. Is Rakic at minus 120 and Procházka at plus 100 even. And, you know, maybe where I started gives you a hint of where I see this fight and where this fight should be. This might be a way different fight for me if Rakic wasn't coming off a two-year layoff after blowing out his ACL. But this is a terrible first fight to come back to something like that. Even if you don't like a guy like Jiří, which I am not the biggest fan of, generally, he's just going to be moving around 100% of the time, pouring on the strikes, doing, you know, putting the tempo up. Rakic is never going to have an opportunity to get in there and breathe and find his way into the fight. And that's going to be really tough after such a long layoff, after such a bad injury. And I just can't trust it. I just can't. Under normal circumstances, I probably would just pick Rakic here, but just the style is just too not good for what Rakic is dealing with here. Rakic is a guy who can put on a boring fight anyway, can be a little bit counter heavy, can be a little bit weighty in the pocket there. And now I just don't know how he's going to look. There certainly aren't a lot of guys you can call up to train for who are going to be able to mimic Jiří. So I just don't know how how well he's going to deal with all the pressure and pace. So I got to pick Jiří Procházka, probably by knockout. He probably just by swarm. And I will go with Drake first. Drake, how do you see this one?
So when this got released and I saw the odds, I could not believe it. They should be flipped. Jiří should be a much higher favorite. Not only is Rakic coming off of that 2-year layoff, he was brutally knocked out by Blachowicz, and I think Jiří is twice the fighter that Blachowicz is now. Not to mention that all of Rakic's wins, like the last two wins, they were both a decision. He lost a split decision before those. And then you can go to the two before that in 2019 and 2018 is when he had knockouts. He fights way too slow, way too patient. And Jiří's Rakic is not going to have a good time in the ring. He is going to get just completely steamrolled. Jiří is one of my favorite plays on the entire slate. He's at 8,000. That's basically a dog play on DraftKings. It's perfect. It's right in the middle. It allows a lot of salary. I'm all over Jiří.
I agree. Yeah, I love it. I think there's just too much going against Rakic here. Joe, how do you see this one? Are you going to join with us or make a huge departure here?
I don't understand the line. I like Jiří quite a bit here. I'm going to be betting on him. I'm probably going to throw him in a parlay with CK. The layoff, I mean, the fact that Jiří actually was winning that fight against Pereira until he wasn't, he didn't look hurt at all. He looked like his shoulder was fully recovered. I like Jiří quite a bit here.
Yeah, I think you have to. I mean, Rakic in the best of times, maybe you can make an argument, but I don't see any other way to go in this one here, especially the toughness of Jiří as well. You put all that together, and it's just, as you said, Drake, not going to be a good night, I feel, for Alexander Rakic. And we are now going to move into the main card. But before we do that, we are going to take a short break for our audio-only podcast listener. And we're back. All right, guys. I hope that was fun and educational for you. But we will now start the main card of UFC 300, and it's the one that we were complaining about being on the main card, but here it is nonetheless. It is Bo Nickel at 9,500 taking on Cody Brundage at 6,700. The odds are absolutely in the stratosphere for this one. Depending on where you look, it could be even higher, but what I am seeing now is minus 1,600 for Nickel, plus 850 on Cody Brundage. And just for funsies, I picked Cody Brundage here, and I did it because because of what Joe said, nobody should be this high of a favorite with five fights, two in the UFC. Those two guys are Jamie Pickett and Val Woodburn. They are now 2-9 in the UFC. We've never seen Bo Nickel have to do anything. That's about the clearest I can make it. He's obviously a great wrestler. He's a great jiu-jitsu guy. We've seen him rolling with some of the best jiu-jitsu players around right now. That's fine. I can't trust him yet at this price. I just can't do it. Now, he could take Brundage down, who's been known to quit, and just tap him immediately. But if he doesn't do that, he's at 9,500. We've never seen the guy have to struggle at all. And I just think that has to worry you. What happens when he gets pushed a little bit? What happens when he gets hit a little bit? We literally don't know the answer to these questions. He's never had a fight go outside the first round. There's just a bunch of stuff where it's like you can't make the guy a minus 2,000 favorite here. He just can't be. I'm picking Brundage on principle, even though I fully acknowledge that Bo Nickel could do awful things to him. But I got to see it first at minus 2,000. You know, I'm just not in it. There's a lot of good fighters here that can put up a lot of points. And will I have some Bo Nickel? Sure. But I have to take a stand here. And I'm going to say it with the whole chest that I am picking Cody Brundage. And we're going to let Drake stew a little bit and shake his head. We're going to go to Joe first. Joe, how do you see this one?
Look, I can't pick Cody Brundage here, but I also would tell you that you're nuts if you lay, you know, 33-1 or 3,000-1, 3,000 on Drake, minus 3,000. I'm sorry, on Drake, on our friend Bo.
I would lay 33-1 on you, Drake, for the record.
Yeah, I wouldn't do that. And even 15-1 to finish inside the distance is rich. You know, it doesn't, honestly, guys, it doesn't add that much to your parlays. Like, if you're parlaying someone up that is that big a favorite, it's not adding much. Oh, man, I think I'm getting a cold. Wow. So I would pick Bo Nickel. I don't know how much of him I'm going to have on DraftKings. If this fight gets outside of the first round, I don't know whether he's going to be optimal or not. He really does need to finish this fight pretty quickly at his salary, at his price point. So, you know, good luck with that. But I'm going to pick Bo for the win.
All right, moving on to the next fight. Okay, Drake.
I don't have a whole lot to say. I'm going to tell you, you said that there's questions that haven't answered. They're not going to be answered in this fight. Cody Brundage is absolutely dreadful. He gets tired immediately. He's got five good punches and a potential takedown, and he's not going to get them against Bo Nickel. I'm also not a gigantic fan of Bo Nickel quite yet. I do think he needs to be tested by somebody that's not completely brain dead, but this is not that fight, and you have to go to sleep knowing that you picked Cody Brundage.
Hey, you know what? In the pantheon of embarrassing things I've done in my life, it doesn't even rate that highly.
Believe I don't know. If Bo Nickel gets another 60-second, you know, win, then yikes.
Well, you know, I still think the fundamentals are sound, and it's not like I'm not going to have. Like, I'm my eyes are open to everything you guys are saying, of course. I just, on principle, minus 2,000, no. So that's as far as my allegiance for Cody Brundage goes. I want people to know this. But, you know, you can't. Look, who thought Neil Magny was going to beat what's-his-name? And now we're calling him what's-his-name, Mike Malott. So, you know, keep it in mind. I mean, obviously a different fighter, a big veteran. I'm just saying. Okay, next fight up is, as we move up to pay-per-view cards, something a little more, actually a lot more enticing. It is Armin Sarukian at 8,700 taking on Charles Oliveira at 7,500. The line on this fight is Sarukian at minus 225, Charles Oliveira plus 190. And I wanted to pick Charles Oliveira so bad. I just did. I love Charles Oliveira. I don't think I can pick him here. I just, he's going to be accepting of being on his back too much. And I'm just not confident that he's going to be able to out grapple Sarukian off of his back. Sarukian's not a great puncher, but he's good enough to at least hang with Oliveira in the pocket and maybe land on him, as everybody does. It's been a while since we've seen Charles Oliveira really maneuver off of his back. I know he got the guillotine on Kevin Lee, but also that was like after Kevin Lee got tired. He had taken him down two or three times before that. I just think it's going to be a little overwhelming here. I love Charles Oliveira. I would love to see him win. You have to have both sides of this fight. Whoever wins this fight is going to score like mad. That has to be noted. But the other thing too, you're probably never going to find. We were talking about, you know, who we like for our dollar earlier. 8,000 range, 9,000 range. You're probably never going to find a guy priced like this who can put up big scores like Armin Sarukian. Like, he'll probably never be below 9,000 again. Even if he loses this fight, his next one is he's probably going to come in as a big favorite. So, I mean, I know you can't really pick a fight like that because styles make fights and etc. But I do think that Charles Oliveira is going to spend too much time off of his back here and maybe give this fight away. And I just think Sarukian is too much of a dog, never been submitted in his career. I don't think it starts here. So I have to pick Sarukian. And this time we will start with Drake. Drake, how do you see this fight?
Du Bronx. You can't tell me Armin Sarukian has been tested yet, because he hasn't. He beat an undefeated Ismagulov. I don't even think he's in the UFC anymore. That fight was whatever. Then he came out, he beat Joaquin Silva. Okay, well, he's still not much of anything. Comes out and beats Benil Dariush, who has lost all sense of fighting in the cage. He has been terrible. He's looked terrible. Dariush is done. He did almost beat Gamrot. That was his best fight to date, and that is the fight that you have to go and look at for this fight. That said, I think Oliveira knocks him out. I love Oliveira. I will, you know, if Saryukin comes out and wins this fight, I'm not going to be surprised, but I still think Oliveira has faced twice the competition that Saryukin has, and I'm not going to have him this far down as a dog is just disrespectful. Oliveira, he's still there. He still wants the belt. He still can fight. Probably, I don't disagree with you, but he didn't. There was a lot of control time that, you know, that kind of turned that fight, and control time hasn't meant a whole lot lately. So in 2024, control time doesn't really mean a whole lot of shit. It's a lot of damage, power, and Oliveira's got better at both of those. So I got Oliveira.
All right, Joe, how do you see this maybe contentious picks here? So how do you break the tie here?
Wow. Yeah, this is very tricky, because initially I looked at this and I'm like, you know, Oliveira at this price looks like a real play. First and foremost, I see this as a GPP fight. I don't know that I would trust either side of this in cash. You know, Oliveira's been chinned, but I don't see Saryukin as having that elite of striking. You know, it's really tough. Like I'm so on the fence. Honestly, I can't remember. No, I do remember who I picked for, you know, the survey that Jake sent around. Jake sends around the survey for all of us to pick fighters in the main events. And I'm pretty sure I picked Saryukin here. But I'm flip-flopping. I'll be really honest with you. I think that, you know, both sides could potentially do well on DraftKings, but I could also see this fight ending really quickly, you know, which, I'm going to stick with Saryukin here, but it is a really, it's not a strong play. I mean, I'm going to stick with the pick I made on Saryukin, and I see both sides here, and I would definitely not fault anyone for wanting to be over market over ownership on Oliveira. At his price point, especially in GPPs.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I said that about Saryukin, and it definitely goes for both fighters. You're probably never going to get either of these guys who are such big point scorers and such active fighters at the range again. This is probably the most intriguing fight on the card for me, because I could see it going either way. But like I said, I have to pick Saryukin, but in my heart, I will be rooting for Charles Oliveira. So keep that in mind, Drake. If Oliveira wins, you can't dunk on me because I wanted that to happen anyway. So here we go with the next fight. And this is an intriguing one, too. I may have spoken too soon, but it is Justin Gaethje at 8,800 taking on Max Holloway at 7,400. Line on this fight is Gaethje at minus 150, Holloway at plus 130. And from the time this fight was announced up until about 2 weeks ago, I was like, Justin Gaethje is just going to win. He's got too much power. We saw what Poirier's power did to him, and Gaethje's going to be in his face with that power the whole time. Then I thought about it a little bit more, and I said, yeah, but he didn't knock Holloway out, did he? In fact, Holloway's never been knocked out. And in fact, Justin Gaethje gets tired even in three-round fights. We saw that Chandler fight was kind of attrition in the third round. And Holloway is just always going to be there. And he's always going to be in his space. You know, as dominant as we remember that Poirier fight now, because he had so many big moments in it and was the rightful winner, Max hurt him a couple of times too. So it wasn't all one-way traffic. And Gaethje is still very hurtable, and he can still get very tired. Max is, of course, hittable, but Max is still the better, I would say, boxer, you know, technical boxer. And I don't know. It's too much for me to bet that Gaethje can knock him out. And if he can't, I don't really see that he wins. I think at a certain point, Holloway, this fight, is going to be even and maybe even look kind of bad for Holloway, maybe in the beginning. But I think at a certain point, he sort of pulls the lever and starts to move away. And I actually, to spoiler, I actually have Holloway by knockout here. I think the attrition is going to get to Justin Gaethje, and I think he's going to end up being finished. But we will see what Joe has to say about that and other things and this fight generally. Joe, how you seeing it?
Yeah, so I think, first of all, I think this is a great fight to stack in cash. This fight has got an incredibly live number to go into the fifth round. And going into the fifth round means that both guys are going to be throwing a lot of strikes. So if you're playing cash, and I have not decided yet whether I am or am not, I am very short stacked this week as a result of having several bad weeks in a row. But if I do play cash, I think this is a very stackable fight because I do think Max has a chance to win. Although I am basing my pick of Justin Gaethje purely off of when I saw Max move up to 155 to fight Dustin Poirier. Poirier won, looked massive. And even though Poirier did not finish Max, he put a beating of all beatings on Max in that fight. So I think Justin is still at the top of his game. I don't think he's missed a step. I see this as like probably one of the most exciting fights on the entire card. You know, you're going to have guys banging, throwing significant strikes. Would I be surprised if Max won? Absolutely not. But I'm picking Gaethje to win here.
Yeah, I agree. Incredibly intriguing fight, exciting fight. You know, I think I'll know pretty early whether I've picked the right side or not. I think if this gets into round two, round three, I'll feel pretty good. Drake, how do you see this one?
So I prefaced my other video with this fight. I have never gone against Justin Gaethje since he has been in the UFC. I have taken him in every single fight. I am going against him in this one. Max Holloway is my favorite dog on the card. He is my favorite dog play. I love Holloway for this. I just think that Gaethje, if you go watch Holloway and TKZ, TKZ was pretty much fighting the same way Justin Gaethje does. Run and punch. Because that's really the only way to beat Max. You have to get in there and you have to throw before he does. The problem is Max is so fast and that jab is just disgusting. We're going to see Justin Gaethje's face bloodied up after two rounds. And from there on, he's going to be tired. And I agree with you. I have Holloway by knockout.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because I try to survey as I'm making my picks and to see who agrees with me and who doesn't. Drake's poker face is getting very good with me because I try to pick up on whether, is he with me or against me on this one? I couldn't tell there. I kind of thought I was kind of crazy. So he's doing a good job concealing what he thinks about these fights. But I do agree. I think Max Holloway is going to rip him up. The speed is a good call coming up in weight, which I didn't touch on. But I think that's going to be a factor as well. And so we move on to one, at least in my mind, and by the odds, not quite as compelling. It is Zhang Weili at 9,200 taking on Yan Xiaonan at 7,000. The line on this fight, Zhang can be had for minus 510, Yan Xiaonan at plus 385. And, you know, it's hard for me to go back, and I know this was a little while ago now, but it's hard for me to go back to the Carlos Esparza fight and say, oh, yeah, Yan Xiaonan is going to be totally fine against this really strong grappler for the weight class who just likes to take people down and is sort of a hybrid in between Jessica Andrade. Like, she does that, but she's not going to rush in. She's going to take her time. She's actually a really competent striker, I think. She's got power. And that grappling is just going to be the X factor. And I don't think Yan Xiaonan is going to be able to stand up to it. I actually really love Weili Zhang at this price. I think this could be like another 110, 120 plus fight for Zhang Weili getting the takedowns and maybe like a second round finish. I really like her a lot in this spot. I don't think Xiaonan is going to, you know, be able to dance around and pepper her into submission the way that she did with somebody like Andrade or has done before. So I really like Zhang here. She is my no doubter pick for the co-main event, but we will start with Drake here. Drake, how do you see it?
So this is kind of a weird fight. I honestly believe that Jan has the number one spot in the rankings and has this fight because there's really nobody else to put there at the moment. Alexa Grasso is the women's pound for pound number one, and I completely do disagree with that. I think Wei Li is the best female fighter in the world right now, and I don't think there is any stopping her. She put up 190 DraftKings points against Amanda Lemos in her last fight. And now you're going to give her somebody that can really just strike. Good luck. I have Zhang all day.
Yeah, I mean, I wish – it's funny because the way that I opened when I was talking about this fight when I wrote it up was that, I mean, there are so many compelling fights. It kind of hurts to have the co-main to be this. No fault of Zhang Weili, of course. She can only fight in her divisions. But, you know, it would be nice to see a challenger. And maybe a bigger, more competitive fight is – was called for such a card in a co-main event. I hope I don't eat those words, but Joe, how do you see this one any differently than the?
No, I mean, look, this is a marketing ploy by the UFC. I mean, they are obviously, look, China is a huge market and they want to sell pay-per-views. They want to at some point hold a fight card, you know, in China. They want to do all this, and that's the reason for this fight. I mean, I don't expect that Yan is going to be any serious competition for Zhang. And I agree with Drake. I mean, I think, you know, Zhang is extremely impressive. And the points that she put up in her last fight, I mean, I don't know that you could expect to get that much out of her. But even if you got, like, you know, 75% of that, I mean, you know, like, it's going to be a good number. You know, so I think she's very attractively priced here. I mean, on any other card, she would probably be the highest priced fighter, right? And you're getting her for 9.2K, and there's enough value in the lower tier here to again play her in another 9K fighter. So I would certainly advise going in that direction. And if you are playing cash, this should be another anchor to your cash lineup.
So Chris, you mentioned, or Joe, you mentioned that they want to you know, pull more of the Chinese, you know, fights in and, you know, bringing all that in. But I think for this card specifically, they should have done what both fighters wanted to do, which was Wei Li versus Grasso. They should have just done it. It would have been way better. And I mean, it's not like, you know, Grasso doesn't have a whole bunch of people behind her. She's got the whole, you know, this country of Mexico behind her. So I mean, I think it's kind of silly that they made this matchup. I get it, but it definitely should have been Grasso and Whaley.
I don't disagree. I mean, I that would have been a much better fight. It would have been better from a fan perspective, although would more people from China have bought pay-per-views? You know, would you know, arguably, you know, the largest consumer market in the world, you know, that you're trying to attract to the UFC, would that be a more compelling fight for them? And the answer is, in all likelihood, no. So I think from a you know, a outside of China perspective and from a fan perspective, Grasso versus Zhang Wei Li, that would have been friggin' awesome. I mean, that would have been a better fight than Pereira Hill.
Yeah, you know, I
totally agree.
I don't know why this has to happen. Isn't having a dominant champion enough to have to get the market? Like,
yeah, but look, you're selling pay-per-views for $79.99. You know, this is the first card in the history of the UFC where they're actually offering reasonable bonuses. And we didn't really talk about that.
Yeah, no, we didn't talk about that.
Yeah, the bonuses are going to be $300K. Yeah. So you're going to see a lot of fighters go bonus hunting here because $300K is huge. I mean, honestly, that's life-changing money for some of these fighters.
Well, it's six, you know, times the normal amount because usually they're 50K bonuses for the biggest out there, and now it's massive.
Right. I mean, even like as it relates to what the show and win money is for some of these fighters, that is a huge sum of money. So, you know, we didn't talk about that. But, like, yeah, I mean, I know what you're saying, Chris, and logically you would think it makes sense. Like, okay, isn't it enough to simply have, you know, the women's champion? excuse me, but you want to get eyes buying pay-per-views. You want to get the Chinese market engaged, having one Chinese, you know, female fight another for the title. I think that's going to be more compelling. I mean, again, I'm putting my business hat on here, not my UFC fan hat on. You know, I'm putting my business hat on, and I could certainly see it. I'm sure someone did a study, you know, like what's going to sell more pay-per-views in China. I mean, again, assuming they even have a way to sell pay-per-views in China, I don't know that that's the case. So anyway, yeah, Zan all the way.
Wait, who all the way?
Yeah, Wiley.
Okay, good.
Yeah, Zan. Wiley.
Okay. I thought you were giving us the swerve of all time.
No.
That would have been, all right, but so we are all agreed there. And now we move on to the main event. It is Alex Pereira at 8,300 taking on Jamahal Hill at 7,900. Line on this fight, Pereira at minus 130, Jamahal Hill plus 110. And, you know, I kind of go back to an old standard here. At least that's where I start, which is the kickboxer beats the boxer. I always kind of live by that that motto. I think it's going to hold up here. Jamahal Hill is a good boxer, but he does leave himself open. He does lunge into his shots sometimes. Yeah, we saw him kind of get tagged up in a couple spots by Glover Teixeira, which should just never happen. And I just think, like, I've seen a lot of heat that's like, Jamahal Hill's just going to knock him out, and he's going to – and I haven't heard any explanations to this effect, but I'd love to hear one because I don't really have it. I think Pereira's in a good spot here, and I think, it's weird to think of him as he's going to be a champion in two weight classes now, being kind of a baby in MMA relatively, but that's what I think we're going to get. I think Pereira is just the better fighter here. I think if there has to be grappling, which I don't think there's going to be much of, I think Pereira wins there too. So I just think he's better everywhere, and he's going to take home the gold. And the prices here for this main event, I really think can be advantageous too. Especially, you know, these are both tremendously active fighters in terms of significant strike output. So, you know, I really like Pereira here. 8,300, book it all day for the main event. And we will start the main event with Drake. How do you see in this one?
So Drake gets the co-main and the main. He gets
go
the
ahead, start. Joe.
That's I'm not right. paying attention.
That's all right, Drake. Go ahead, buddy. Go ahead.
So you guys remember Joey. Joey's all over Jamahal Hill for this fight. And I told him, I was like, I can't see it. I can't get behind it. He's coming off an injury. He's going to be much slower. And I think a lot of people, specifically people that aren't as into the UFC as, you know, some of us are, don't know or just kind of forget how many fights Alex Pereira has on his belt. His kickboxing boxing record is pretty insane. Not to mention the amount of finishes that he has. The difference in speed in this fight is going to it's going to leave Hill so uncomfortable. And Hill, I can't figure out Hill. He looks good here and there. He looks – the fight against Teixeira, he beat a 40-year-old guy and just made him look silly, and that was really about it. Pereira is dangerous. He's beaten Izzy for a reason. He now has the belt in this division, the vacant belt from, you know, the last fight with Jiří. I don't see how Hill wins this fight unless he goes to his wrestling. And I don't think that he will. And I'm not even sure he's going to have the chance to, because Pereira is just so fast.
Yeah, no, absolutely agree. The speed here, as I said, speed kills. I love it. And it's hard for me to find a way that he wins as well. And now, Joe, what do you have to say about the main event?
Okay, so looking at following some narrative, you mentioned how your boy was on Hill. Let me tell you some other people who were on Hill. Sorry, man. I can't believe I'm getting sick on this podcast. Die Hard, you know, Clint, our butt Clint, who does a lot of content. He's, you know, very entertaining. The largest bet of his life he has on Hill, $4,200. is what I heard. I don't know this from Clint, but I heard this from I listen to a lot of content for these big cards, and I was listening to really entertaining and low-key hilarious pod is, you know, Santino DeFranco, a head coach and part owner of Fight Ready, you know, which was the split off from MMA Lab, and his partner is Brandon Oliveris, who actually won $1 million one weekend betting MMA. He's a fighter as well, but he won $1 million betting MMA. And he was talking, he did like a guest spot on Clint's show. And apparently he was the one who said, you know, the largest bet of his life, $4,200, was bet on Jamahal Hill. Now, I was also listening to the Run Pure Sports pod today. And I did not hear the whole pod. I was actually, believe it or not, I was getting acupuncture done. And, you know, while the needles were sitting in my lower back, I was kind of watching an MMA pod. And apparently JBC is one of, like, who's DraftKings royalty and one of the largest, you know, players of DFS, you know, in the world, is a Hill supporter. Now, on the other side of the fence is my good friend and fellow New Jerseyan who left the coast and moved to California. His name is Mike. He goes by Mad Lab. He was talking about the injury to Jamahal Hill and how anyone could be confident in a fighter's first fight back, you know, after that injury, and how he wasn't even planning to fight this soon, but he got called. Like, he wasn't training. He got called by the UFC and said, how would you like to be the main event for UFC 300? So, excuse me, someone waves that much money at you, you kind of say, yeah, okay, I'll get off the couch and I'll train. So when I looked at these lines, I thought to myself, Hill as well, first, before I got kind of like listened to the narrative and thought about it. And what Mike said made a lot of sense. I have to go with Pereira here. 8.3K. I will have a few shares of Hill just in case, but I really do think Pierre is the right size here. And at 8.3K against a fighter coming off a really serious injury, his first fight back, someone who really wasn't into heavy training, wasn't planning on fighting this soon. Show me. I mean, you know, like, if I get beat by Hill, I'll wish Clint well. Like, congratulations, you won $4,200 at whatever, plus 110, plus 120, whatever you got on it. Congratulations, Clint. By the way, I honestly think that Quint is really a Cullen and comes from Forks in Twilight, because I've seen that guy do an entire pod and not blink his eyes, which is absolutely amazing to me. That, like, you could drink all the Fireball and eat all the popcorn that you want, but, like, when you don't blink for like 60 minutes, like, I you got to be a vampire. Anyway, so I'm going to go with Pereira here. If Hill wins, great, more power to him, but I'll take 8.3K.
Yeah, and like I said, you know, I would love to hear, like, maybe I'll go hunt one out. I try not to look at too much content before we start because I don't want it to, like, seep into my brain, and then I'll watch other stuff. But I would like to hear, like, a detailed breakdown of.
Well, one of the things, Chris, that's really good about this pod, right, yes, is that, at least from my perspective, and you see, I'm just the opposite. I want to listen to everything before I do this pod because I have a full-time job. So one of the things that I developed was being able to filter out information, you know, from various other content providers. And I sort of have a routine that I follow. Like, I start out with Adam Newsom, who MMA Play 365. He is always early. Like, he has a pod out first thing. And then I kind of follow the week. So at least as it relates to me, like, on these pay-per-view cards, you know, you're getting the benefit of, you know, everything that I viewed up to this point, including, you know, Brett Apley, who's now at Establish the Run, and you know, all these other pods that I listen to, Half the Battle. You know, I am amalgamating all that information and kind of filtering it out. So because this is a late pod, which I love, like, I could not do this pod if it was an early pod. Like, if it was an early in the week pod, I would not be able to do it. One, I simply would not have the time. You know, I would not be prepared. You know, like, I give all the credit to Uncle Weezy and you know, Brady for, God, putting a pod together on Sunday night. It's friggin' amazing. Like, that's pure dedication. Like, I give them so much credit for that. But, like, you're getting the benefit. And I don't know how you manage it, Drake, and maybe you could tell our millions of viewers how you look at it, but you're getting, when I'm doing this pod, you're getting the benefit of everything that I filtered in and out from all the other pods.
So for me, it's when I have to have my article written and submitted on Wednesdays, and then I've got a podcast on Thursday, and then I've got this for the, you know, the title cards or UFC cards on Fridays. But my week generally starts Sunday night. That's when I start looking into things, especially when there's new fighters. I go and watch as much tape as I can, and I try to pick, and, you know, just to get a feel for all the fighters. And then Wednesdays when I write, I do the rest of my research, and I, you know, that's when I piece together everything. So I put a lot into it. There's, you know, there's a lot that goes into it, especially when there's new fighters. Like last week, I think it was like 6 or 7 debuting fighters. That takes a lot. For this one, we know all these fighters. So, I mean, it is what it is, but there's a lot that goes into this stuff.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Not to suggest that, you know, obviously I do research. I just feel like if you're, and you know, different perspectives, but I just feel like if you want to hear my perspective, here it is. And you can go to those other pods to hear, you know, other perspectives.
Well, but, I'm the Reader's Digest version of the other pods.
Yeah, no, that's cool. And I like that too. I mean, because let's say somebody can only listen to one pod. And if you could only listen to one, please make it this one. But if you can only listen to one pod, I like that, you know, we're getting an amalgamation of every other pod. Oh, and Drake and Joe's pod, of course.
And again, by the way, I'm not plagiarizing here. I will always give, if I hear something, I will always give credit to the person I hear it from. I will never brand it as my own. Never. And now I will tell you, Calvin Kattar is my own pick. There may be some other pods who like Kattar in this spot, but, you know, this is the work I did on this and why I think the line should be flipped and why I think Kattar is going to maybe even finish Sterling. That's all me. I'm not taking that from any other pod, even though there may be some other pods that actually feel the same way as me, maybe not.
And I'm glad you brought that up, Joe, because I should say I am definitely not plagiarizing anyone else when I pick Cody Brundage. So,
okay.
I just wanted to make that clear. And we are going to move on to hot takes now.
I gave you my hot take, so I'm going to abstain from hot takes. My hot take is I have Calvin Kattar as my best play on the slate at 7.9K. Okay.
Yep, absolutely.
I'll listen to you guys in our audience.
All right, but I was just going to say before we do that, because I saw this comment, I wanted to leave it to the end. I know we don't talk a lot about FanDuel here, but Steven asks, the most optimal captain in large FanDuel GPPs, just a note that if anybody doesn't play on FanDuel too much, note that you do not get charged more money for putting something in the captain spot as you might on some other sites. So with that in mind, gentlemen, do you have particular captain plays that you would like? Let's say you were playing on FanDuel. I'm not sure if either of you do, but if you were going to, where would your captain
play? I think it's got to be Wei Li. I mean, I think she has the highest upside. You know, again, I gave up playing FanDuel when they put cartoon characters of the fighters in the, like, and not to mention their prize pools are for shit. You know, I just don't like the way, I mean, they had an opportunity during COVID to build a really large base and they just kind of blew it. So like, I only play DraftKings. I only play DraftKings Sportsbook, which I know limits myself, but
right.
I'm trying to keep all my rewards and bonuses in one place. So, but I do play the captains spot in DraftKings, which to Chris's point is a little bit different than how they do it on FanDuel. You know, you're paying 1.5 times the salary. But I definitely like at the same, especially at a flat price. Yeah. I like Wei Li.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to make that unanimous. I stopped playing FanDuel when they took away takedowns defense. I thought that made them interesting at least. And now there's nothing unique about them whatsoever. They have submission attempts. In 90% of fights, you don't get enough submission attempts for that category to matter. And so I just lost interest.
Subjective scoring is very difficult too. We've always had issues with Fight Metrics, and
yeah,
hasn't been as bad lately. I'll give them some credit, but like we've always had issues. And like when you have things like submission attempts and like the more esoteric, you know, that's going into the scoring, the harder it is to actually score. So I have no idea who FanDuel uses, you know, to score their fights.
Yeah.
So I would, so we're all unanimous on, you know, on Zhang, but you know, I would, she's great for GPP, but she's also really good for cash. And there's probably gonna be a lot of people on her. So for GPPs, I would actually move to the captain spot. I'd either have Figueiredo or Prochazka, because I think both of those guys end it early and with a lot of damage.
Yeah, and that's another thing. I mean, scarcity in the captain spot, I think, is going to be important too. And in that sense, I like those pivots for sure. But now we will move on properly to hot takes. So if anybody in the chat has a hot take, Victor watching from Brazil, shout out. Well, I don't know if you're in Brazil. He said Brazilian. But I'm going to take that as we have a fan in Brazil. So thank you so much, Victor, for watching. And in chat there, if you're not familiar, a hot take is something that is, you know, above the odds. It's nice and juicy. It could be a prop, could be a parlay. We think, or you think, that it has a little bit of a, or a lot of a better chance of coming in than the odds suggest. And so we debut it here. I'm going to take the host privilege and potentially steal one from Drake, which is Max Holloway by knockout. I've seen it at plus 700. I've seen it at plus 550. Both of those lines are crazy in a fight like this, and I think you should take advantage of them. Now that I've stolen yours, Drake, do you have another fresh one for us?
Yeah, so I've got a three-person parlay. It's Figueiredo, Andrade, and Prochazka. It's three fighters I'm really confident in. It pays around +3 to +350. And it's probably my favorite one on, you know, the whole thing. And then I also like, as just a singular separate bet, Oliveira by knockout, which is about plus 700, similar to Holloway.
Yeah. No, I love that prop. I like all three of those fighters as well. And, you know, putting like Prochazka, some of those fights are closely lined. You can get them in parlays where you're really confident in them. I think that's really great as well. As far as hot take goes, I saw kind of a general one here that I thought was interesting. And Ty has a twofer for us, but I like this one too, as more of a general sense. Oh, sorry, that's the wrong one. This is one of the woman's underdogs will ruin everyone's night. And that is always one of my greatest fears, but I don't see it happening this time, but it's interesting to think about nonetheless. Ty also has a more proper, I guess you would say, hot take here, a little parlay that he's throwing in.
You're crazy if Garbrandt wins that. You're wasting money.
That big puncher, I mean, that's what we do for parlays, right? We kind of want to stack up the most profit possible. If he lands a punch, you know, who knows? I don't see it. You don't see it. But Ty sees it. And while I can't exactly wish you good luck, because I'm staunchly on the other side, I hope that, you know, I hope you don't put too much money on it. I'll say that much. But all right. I think that we are going to call it a night. Thank you guys so much for watching. Enjoy this card. I know we focus on the X's and O's, but try to enjoy this one too, because it's really going to be fun. It starts at 6 p.m. Eastern, so you're gonna have the whole night to just sit around and watch MMA like the good old days of MMA when it was worth watching into the night. So enjoy the card. Do your best to profit. Hopefully we can help out some in that regard. Good luck to everybody in your contest. You know, me at the onlyest one, Drake at D Birds, and Joe at Sun Tzu on Twitter. Everyone, that is going to be it for us. We will catch you on the next pay-per-view. Once again, I say good luck. I say thank you to Drake. I say thank you to Joe. And everybody, have a good night. And thank you so much for watching.
Peace.